and Richie's Daily Takeaway.
Bush and Richie's Daily Takeaway.
Absolute Radio.
Stephen Knight, welcome to Absolute Radio.
Great to be here.
It's great to be here, man. We were with you last night, not in a weird way, watching the UK premiere of the amazing Oasis, Don't Look Back in Anger. And the thing that really hit me was just how emotional it was.
Yes.
And it was really interesting because I was at the first Cardiff gig,
yeah.
You know, the big kind of comeback. And the first thing I thought when the band walked onto stage was, oh my God, Noel looks like he's crying. Noel looks like he's in bits. And something that comes to light in the course of, very quickly in the course of the documentary, is just how emotional it was for all of them in the band. Yeah. But also it kind of caught Noel by surprise.
It did. And he wasn't expecting Liam to take his hand and hold his hand up in the air. And he said, I mean, the quote that we use in the film, he says, I walked out and I thought, what I really need to do now is go back to the dressing room because I have grossly missed and underestimated what this is going to be. And I think it was that the wave of emotion that no one really expected.
That became such an iconic image as well.
I know.
Of that summer, didn't it?
Yeah.
I wonder whether, do you think that, did you realise this was going to be as big as it was at the same time as Liam and Noel, or before or after?
Now, well, I mean, when I was invited to do it, and I thought this would be great, you know, it's going to be a wonderful story. And I didn't really think this, as soon as I met them, I could tell that they both individually had a burning desire to make this work. So if nothing else, they were going to see it through. So I felt quite confident about that. When I first met Noel, he said that they were not expecting the tidal wave of interest when they announced. They thought there'd be, you know, there'd be a demand, but not what it was. And it became apparent that it's not just the people who were there for the first incarnation. A new generation has, for whatever reason, found this music for themselves. And it's not as a consequence of them touring or an ad campaign or marketing. People have just found it. And it's this younger generation. And therefore, the question I wanted to ask with the documentary is why? Why have these songs endured? Why around the world have people of a new generation found it? Which is great, and that's the point of the documentary. But when we got to Cardiff, it isn't just that this generation have found a connection with the music. It's a really visceral connection. And what's even more important, there are fathers and sons who have their own interpretation of what the music is. They both possess the songs for themselves.
Yeah.
And in that moment, they look to each other. It's not just fathers and sons, mothers and daughters, mothers and sons. They look to each other, and there's that bridge. And they just start crying, you know.
Yeah.
And we were all astonished at the absolute outpouring of emotion. And you think, yeah, okay, it's the first show. That's what it's going to be like. All the way through, everywhere, Korea, you know, Australia, Dublin, everywhere, South America especially, people were having exactly the same reaction.
It was amazing to see how emotional the Argentinians got about it there. Didn't mention the Falkland Islands then with the Gallaghers, did
they?
Exactly. No flags?
Yeah, yeah. Where's your Malvinas now?
Exactly. There is some amazing crying in the documentary. It's almost like a brilliant study of human emotion, particularly the lad in Cardiff who's just almost bewildered. All of his mates are walking by. There's people lying on the floor just trying to take stock. Did you have to look through, like, hours of footage to find people who are emotional?
No, because everybody was.
Yeah.
You know, it was. But that moment always gets me, because that kid is actually on his own. He's at the concert on his own.
Wow.
And these two blokes that were, you know, in their 40s come up and go, "You all right, mate?" He goes, "Yeah, I'm okay." It's just them little moments. And there's somebody who writes dialogue and fiction. It's very humbling that you just point a camera at a real person who's feeling emotional. And the lady in Korea who says, and she's crying, she says, when you fall down, some music picks you up, but Oasis fall down with you and they get up with you. And you think, what a line, you know. It's amazing.
At what point in the last few years did you learn then that Oasis were getting back together? Like, at what point did you join the journey?
It was a very odd route to this, because I did a deal with Liam a few years ago where I directed one of his videos for one of his singles, and in return he agreed to appear at a Peaky Blinders festival in Birmingham. And he went down a storm, of course. He was brilliant, and we got on. And then I shortly after the announcement of the concert tour, I got a text. I was at the keyboard as ever, and I got a text from Liam's partner saying, "I know you're busy, but would you be?" And I texted straight back saying, "I am very busy. However, yes, I would love to do this." And apparently, Liam and Noel both wanted me, not in spite of me never having done a documentary, but I think because of it somehow.
Yeah. Mm.
And they, you know, they wanted me to do the interviews because I wasn't a journalist, sort of thing. So that was the start of the journey. And I never thought about saying no. And it's only now when I'm doing press and people are saying, weren't you worried that they were going to, that it might happen again? I think, actually, no, I wasn't. I thought it's going to be all right.
What about Liam and Noel as characters in a future episode of Peaky Blinders?
Oh, wow.
Wouldn't they be amazing? Like two kind of Manchester bosses that come over to cause a stir. What do you think? Would that work?
Or what about if one is a chief of police? Then the other one is a famous gangster.
Oh, wow. So like a family split.
Yeah, okay, it's in.
There you go, it's done. Locked in.
I'm a bit of a stadium nerd, and I went to one of the Wembley dates, which there was seven of. Now, I know that there was obviously one of the survivors of the Manchester attacks who went to the Wembley gig. But I didn't see the stadium featured, and I wondered whether that was like a conscious thing. It's like the arch and Wembley is such a iconic thing. I didn't see as much of Wembley as I thought.
Maybe it's because I can see it out of my window. But no, I think we were very conscious of stadium fatigue, that we didn't want to go, look where we are, everybody. You know what I mean? And it's about the experience of the people. But yeah, I mean, I love Wembley. Mm.
You know, I mean, you don't need me to tell you, the world is pretty shit at the moment. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of bad news, never-ending stream of bad news. And I feel like Oasis and what they gave us with that tour and being back and the reconciliation was almost like superheroes saving us in our hour of need.
I really, from the beginning, wanted this idea that we live in a time of division and silence, screaming of insults on the internet and all of that stuff that's going on, politicians trying to find division wherever they can. That here is a story of two people that is bigger than that, because you're also seeing in the crowd, you're seeing people having reconciliations. And you're also, you know, we found people who've got very specific connections to the songs all over the world.
Yeah.
And I really wanted it to be good old-fashioned 60s peace, love, understanding, hope. You can do this. And what's happening a lot is people are watching it and thinking and getting emotional about it and thinking, actually, I haven't spoken to my half-sister for like 10 years. Maybe I should give her a ring, which is great.
See, also as well, people reading into the and making a big thing of the lyrics, which normally, previously, I've never really kind of thought about Oasis lyrics, but they mean a hell of a lot to people.
Oh, I've always, that was when, you know, the first time round, I always felt that Noel wasn't someone who sat down and consciously thought, I'm going to write a song about this. It's like he's a radio picking stuff up, like the best poets are. And so those lines are coming from somewhere else, and I think he will say the same thing. But because they are that, because they are so sort of universal, that's why it doesn't matter which generation it is. You know, everybody finds a line that's about, I mean, mine is going to start a revolution from my bed, you know, and like when I was that age, I want to change the world, but I can't be arsed to get that again. You know what I mean?
I read that when you were on Desert Island Discs, you said that George Michael would be music that you would want to take to the desert island, which is obviously very different to Oasis. I wonder what Oasis meant to you personally, sort of first time round.
The way that music appeals to you is too mysterious to even have an opinion on. It's just you love it or you don't, you know, and the music and the, that's why they all became anthems, those songs, because the tunes are so are sort of held in common. But for me, as I say, it was, I'm from a similar place to them, let's put it that way, in Birmingham, and it was, for me, these were working class brothers who were saying, yeah, it's pretty bad where we are, but we can get out. Not only get out, it's going to be okay, we're going to make it okay. And that mood of hope in the 90s seemed very obvious, you know. Of course there's hope, of course it's going to be better, the Cold War's ended, it's all going to get better. And some Japanese historian said history's over, which hasn't aged well. As
it's not. Yeah.
He's always getting reminded of that.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I bet he is. But now we're living in opposite times, and it's sort of now. I mean, it's funny just saying Oasis. Like, this is like an Oasis in these troubled times, and I think that's why this film is important. I think possibly that's why the reaction in cinemas, as well as, you know, it was amazing in the stadiums, but now in cinemas, I'm hearing people crying from about 15 minutes in, and they're crying, and, you know, hard-hearted people like my agent are crying, you know, and it's really having that that effect, which we really hoped it would.
But is that too much pressure on Liam and Noel? There's a little bit in the film when, you know, Liam's talking about, you know, we're not the Messiah. No, we can't heal people.
Yeah, yeah.
But when you are in such tough times like we are at the moment, and people look so much, invest so much in them and their music, and them doing Nebworth or them going on tour again, and maybe releasing new music, are we almost placing too much on their shoulders?
I think they'll be fine. Do you know what I mean? Because I think the way that they have a real connection with the fans, but it's not one of those. It's not patronizing, it's not sentimental, you know, it's a genuine connection, an identification with the fans that they have. And, you know, that virtually everything they say you could put on a t-shirt as a quote, because they're so funny and so articulate. But, you know, Liam, when he says that, he says, you know, we can't change the world, but we can do our bit. And Noel then says, if you can do something, you should.
Yeah,
and that's about as far as it goes, I think. And I think what they're trying to do, and one of the fans says, "Don't pick up a knife, pick up a guitar." You know, and if those little incremental effects do have a meaning, then that's enough. That's their job done, I think.
Do you ever feel you've done so much? Do you ever feel personal pride? Get the chance to sort of like stand back and think, "My God, I've been entrusted with like national treasures here," like, so with Oasis, with Liam and Noel, and obviously now you're working on the next Bond. That's two things that every single person in this room cherishes, and you've been entrusted with like nurturing it forward. That's incredible.
I hadn't thought about it till now, actually.
No pressure.
No, I tell you, I genuinely try not to think about it in those terms, because I think the pressure would be quite bad. But with Bond, it's like I'm doing my bit for King and Country, you know, I'm doing my duty.
Would either Liam or Noel make a better Bond?
I've been asked that question and I can't answer it.
Do you think there'll ever be anything like Oasis ever again?
Yeah, there's got to be, isn't there? I mean, if as I just said, if someone doesn't pick up a knife and picks up a guitar, who's from the same place that they're from, you know, and decides to form a band and has, crucially, the thing that I learned about them both, has the same work ethic. Because when I first started doing this, somebody said, if you have a meeting with them, they'll be early. And when they start something, they work and work and work until they've got it right. So, you know, some people, maybe they're brothers, maybe they're friends, but they come along with, Leonard Cohen said, all you need to be a writer is arrogance and inexperience. And what you need is young people who don't realise it can't be done. And they just do it anyway.
You talk about when you meet them. When I was watching last night at the premiere, there's a moment like maybe halfway through the film, I'm thinking, I'm loving this. I really hope there's going to be a moment where we see them sat together. And then that comes. Were you in the room? And how precious a time was that? Because that was one of my favourite bits of the film.
I did the interview. And they specifically said they didn't want a journalist to do it. And so at that point, the crucial moment had come where their kids had met. And that was really important for the way that this thing went, because their kids had never met. And then they introduced them to each other and they got on House on Fire, and then suddenly the cousins are a gang. And so that had happened. And so suddenly when we sat down in a pub with no beer, but we sat in the pub and they just talked about each other and the old days. And it was just a conversation that was, as usual, hilarious and poignant and brilliant. But it was like, there's a great expression, the older I get, the more like myself I become. And there are two men who have grown up, they've got their kids, they've lost some of that nonsense that is involved in youth or even early middle age. And they are themselves, you know, and they're just talking to each other like brothers.
One thing I found really fascinating, actually really interesting, the rehearsal bits at the beginning was really interesting to peek behind the curtain of these things and how they're put together. Just how on it and obsessed Noel is about every detail. Oh, tell him, Boner, don't play that, change it. It's incredible. I didn't expect him to be like that, but he's over everything.
He's absolutely, and that's how they got to where they got, because he's a you know, I love it. It's quite funny as well. He says, you know, you're going did, don't do that. But then the moment when the first time he tells Liam what to do, which is on day one, and he's talking about take me there, and he sort of does a version of what he wants Liam to sing, and Liam takes the mickey out of him and sort of imitates him, and through all the bodies they laugh, both laugh, they share a joke, and that's when I thought, this is going to be okay.
Stephen, one final question, because you've got so much going on right now. You've got loads to do. We've got a home time show to do on Absolute Radio. Unless I've read this wrong, you started your career writing radio commercials?
No, I certainly did, just down the road from here at Capital.
I wonder whether you've got a favourite.
Commercial?
Mm-hmm.
Really, really favourite. Well, this it would be one of those mad ones from, well, I can't remember, it was a comedy duo, the Daft Jack. You wouldn't remember this.
No.
It was just, it was like, radio commercials were radio commercials, and then suddenly these ads coming along that were actually really funny.
Yeah.
And it was all about old Daft Jack. He's Daft Jack. He's Daft Jack. But he does something really smart about this product. When it is. And that's when I thought, this radio ads can be good.
And look what happened.
Now look at you. Yeah. Hey?
Yeah.
Well, listen, it's been brilliant to chat to you. Go see it. It's amazing. Oasis, Don't Look Back in Anger. It's a beacon of hope.
It is.
It's a beacon of hope. Stephen Knight, thank you so much.
It's an absolute pleasure.
Thank you.
Bush and Richie's Daily Takeaway.
Absolute Radio.